You are listening to Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, season 2, episode 6. This is JJ Sefton, Monday, October 3rd, 2022. This is episode number 6 of season 2. And I'm joined once again by my co-blogger and great friend, CBD. CBD, how's it going on this Monday for you?
Oh, it's going wonderfully. It's a miserable overcast day, and I'm inside poking around, not doing much. So I figured, what the hell? Let's do a podcast. Here we go.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I'm in southern Wisconsin, and it's a nice crisp fall day here. The sun is shining, and it's nice to not be in New York City, where I understand a decomposing body has floated to the surface at in the Central Park Lake, and an EMS worker was stabbed 50 times in broad daylight to death. So
yeah, that was charming. 60-year-old woman who's been an EMT for years, I think 20 or 30 years. She was on duty responding to some sort of injury. I think it was a stabbing in progress, and she caught the sharp end of it. She was stabbed 20 times, and I think New York is long overdue for some significant knife control. It's obvious that the proliferation of knives in New York City is out of control, and they need to start cutting back on the sheer number of knives on the street. People can just walk into stores. It's easier to buy a knife than it is to buy a book in parts of New York. I think it's disgusting, and there ought to be a law.
There ought to be a lore, as they say in New York. Absolutely. And, you know, if you go to Tad's Steakhouse and you have to, if it saves one person's life by you having to gum your piece of leather to death there at Tad's, then it would have been worth it, I think. The sirens in the background, I think, here in Wisconsin, that you hear rarely, bear me out. But here in Wisconsin, though, we have, you know, we're and I'm going to tease this because I think it's a little bit too early. And next week, the great Dave in Florida will be joining us as the polls really start to tighten up and we can get a really accurate picture of where the midterms are heading. But here in Wisconsin, for example, and this is just anecdotal on my part, I am seeing virtually zero ads, at least on the internet, for this Mandela Barnes crackpot, while Ron Johnson is just blitzing with anti-Barnes ads, which is true because he is for defunding the police and for open borders. And so now all of a sudden, the ads, I believe, on the Democrat side, when you do see them, are all now shifting towards the abortion issue and how Tim Michaels is going to take away your right to choose and so on and so forth. But nothing about crime, nothing about open borders, because that is, of course, I think the two, along with the horrible economy, the dying economy, are the issues that are really going to, all things considered, if there is no shenanigans at the polls, it's going to really sink the Democrats in a massive tsunami of a red wave, so to speak.
Absolutely. Is there any positive news for the Democrat socialist apparatus in either domestic or foreign politics? And the answer is absolutely not. Foreign policy in the United States is a catastrophe. It is an abject failure. And I'm not even going to list the number of failures we've had even in the last 6 months. And domestically, the economy is rapidly going into the shitter, as you just pointed out. And so what do they have to run on? Well, they have to run on the fact that, you know, maybe somebody out there isn't going to be able to get an abortion on demand in 5 minutes. Well, okay. I just saw an ad within the last several days for my congressional district race. I've mentioned him before. The Democrat is a guy named Josh Gottheimer, who's a sleazy little bastard, and I can't stand him. He's a smarmy, smug prick who lies through his teeth. He's going to cut taxes. He's going to support Jersey values, whatever the hell Jersey values are. And there was this cheering, disgusting pro-abortion, not pro-choice, but pro-abortion ad that was, you know, it turned my stomach. It was so vile. And that's what they're going to run on. And I think that there might even be a small segment of the Democrat voting population who watches ads like that and says, you know, guys, maybe you shouldn't be cheerleaders for 37-week abortions. And yet that is what they're going to run on. And I think it's going to be very interesting next week when we talk to Dave in Florida and hear what he has to say about the importance of abortion as a litmus test for candidates and how much of an effect it is going to have on the midterm elections.
I mean, I can be totally wrong, but I don't think it's really going to have any effect. It might here and there maybe shift a few votes. But in the main, there have been poll after poll, even in the wake of the Dobbs decision, that effectively overturned Roe versus Wade, that there was no bounce because of it. Very little, minimal, if anything, maybe in the week that followed. I think for the most part, there are poll after poll is being taken nationally that states that most Americans, the vast majority of Americans, support some sort of limitation on abortion. From either just, you know, whether it's a 20 week or what we talked about this in the last podcast, a minimum time frame where you can at a certain point where you cannot have an abortion up until, you know, obviously a ban on it completely. But for the most part, Americans do not like it and want some limits on it. So this is definitely something that I think the Democrats are once again shooting themselves in the face over this. It's not going to give them any kind of a bounce. And the main thing that people are concerned about is, I should say, the economy, which is, as we have said, is dying, and also the border, which does not exist. And we have an invasion from the south, and it's really just at the behest of this of the junta in Washington, D.C. that wants to dissolve American society and the American electorate, and basically have a vast underclass of people that, after they've aborted them via genocide of the black and Hispanic communities over the last 50 years since Roe versus Wade, they need to replace them. And the replacement theory is not a theory. It's actually in practice. It is happening. We have millions, who knows, anywhere from the minimum of, they say, 11 million, which is ridiculous, upwards of 40 million people in this country who are foreigners and who came here in the main illegally over the last, who knows, upwards of 55 to 60 years, at least since the Teddy Kennedy opened the borders. It was the Hart-Celler Act. And then, unfortunately, Ronald Reagan's sellout over, being bamboozled over Simpson-Mazzoli in 1986. So abortion is a dead issue. The issues are the economy and open borders. And that is what is motivating people. As I said on this morning's, or I wrote on this morning's morning report, when you have people such as this character named Charlemagne the God, who ain't exactly a Reaganite conservative, when he is railing against Biden and the Democrats for bamboozling people and being, you know, anti-black, I think this is an anecdotal indicator of a sea change, that many of these traditional black voting blocs are just, if they're not going to be going over to the GOP, they are probably going to either stay at home, or at some point maybe they will see the light, as Donald Trump said. You know, look, you voted for these people for years and years, and what has it gotten you? What have you got to lose by voting for me? And so hopefully this translates into a broader Republican mindset of, what do we have to lose if we vote for the Republican instead of the Democrat?
I wonder if the shift in the black voting patterns is less important than the shift in the traditional Hispanic voting pattern of, obviously, not quite the 95% plus Democrat votes that black America has guaranteed the juntas. But I think that the attack on family values has backfired spectacularly on the part of the Democrat Party, because, you know, there's a lot of nonsense being thrown around about Hispanic voting patterns. But I think in general, and boy, am I making a huge generality here, a huge generality. What the hell does that mean? I'm making some pretty, pretty broad assumptions, but I think that there are more that family and church and religion is more important in the Hispanic populations of the United States. And the attacks, the obvious overt attacks on all of those things on the part of the Democrat socialist machine in the United States is, as I said, it's backfiring. And, you know, fascinatingly, there is also a sort of a groundswell in Hispanic America against open borders. And I don't understand it, but I approve.
So, and I agree with you. It's not, it used to be the phenomenon where, you know, the typical knuckleheads in the GOP used to say, yeah, yes, the, and I hate the word Hispanic because it's a fake word. It's Latino, really, is the real thing. It's a Hispanic came from the Nixon administration. But in any event, the Latino community, which is not a monolithic bloc absolutely. I mean, you have all variety from all over the world. And, you know, people from Venezuela are very, very different from people in Spain, and people in Argentina are very different from people in Mexico. But the fact is, it used to be the bastion of Latino conservatism was always Florida because of the Cuban exiles who knew firsthand exactly what socialism is all about. And they got it good and hard, courtesy of the Castros and the current regime, which is still there 62, 63 years later. But now, over the last, since the coming of Trump and the last couple of election cycles, there have been certain special elections and regular elections that have happened that have put the fear of God into the Democrat Party. The communities on the border of Latinos, of Mexican descent and of Central American descent are fleeing the Democrat Party in droves. And this is scary. I think it's scaring them shitless. And this is where they thought, lo and behold, there was going to be this great demographic shift towards the Democrat Party, primarily driven by the Latino voting blocks from south of the border, from Latin America and Central America, and it ain't happening. In fact, it's just the reverse, because they do not they know what it's like that they're fleeing these these Latin American failed states, whether it's Venezuela or Guatemala or Mexico, of course, which is a failed state.
I think you're making a good point, but I have to disagree about the sea change in these people. Yes, they are fleeing failed states. They don't like being murdered by the cartels. They don't like living in abject poverty. They don't like an incredibly corrupt government that takes from them and gives them nothing. But they are bringing a socialist sensibility to the United States, and it's going to take a long, long time for that to shift to a more libertarian, more conservative outlook on political philosophy. I don't think it's going to happen in this generation, maybe not even the next generation, or at all. But
I can agree with your point. I think the Latin American communities, the Mexican American communities of naturalized citizens who have lived and real citizens who have lived on the borders between Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California and Mexico, who have lived there for generations, are in the main, I would say they're definitely, at least in this generation, I think, are leaning more and more. They understand what it's like to own businesses and to be part of what was the American dream, and to actually pay taxes. Now, a lot of them obviously used to be or are a core Democrat constituency, but the Democrat Party of today is very different from what it was even 20 years ago. So I think that's going to be the nucleus of this conservative, along with, of course, the Cuban American community in Florida, the nucleus of this change that will bring about, a shift towards more conservative, more Republican candidates. Now, as you say, with this flooding of the zone of millions of an underclass of people fleeing, and yes, they do bring the socialist mindset, yeah, that tends to kind of, swamp things. And so the question is, which is stronger in the long run? Will sheer numbers, unfortunately, overwhelm, or will sanity prevail? That's the question.
Well, we'll find out on November 8th?
I believe it is. I'm going to say November 8th. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but the first Tuesday in November, we definitely will find out. And that's 4 weeks away. Crazy.
It's going to be exciting.
Let's take a little bit of a break, and we'll be right back in a second. And we're back. CBD, JJ Sefton, Cut Jib Newsletter Speaks, the podcast, season 2, episode 6. Continuing in the vein of Latin America and voting habits, they're taking a more global view of things. Right now, there was an election, I believe, in Brazil, and it looks like there's going to be a runoff election between Javier Bolsonaro, the conservative, and someone who Trump has supported over the years. And this, I don't know his name, but this Lula character who is a freak socialist. So unfortunately, there has been a kind of a backsliding, if you will, in Central America and South America towards socialist candidates. I think Chile just had a recent election where they staved it off, but I forgot where. Maybe it was Colombia, I think, just elected a socialist. So It's, you know, that it's two, it's one step forward and two steps back for that country. But on a broader view, there was a tidal wave election, a massive shock to the system, if you will. It was almost really a 1-2 punch, because in Sweden, a non-leftist candidate who was for sane immigration policy in that country was preceded by this woman named Giorgia Meloni, who was a conservative politician who won a majority for the right in Italy. And that was a real shock. And
she is an unapologetic nationalist, which I absolutely love seeing in Europe, because Europe has embraced over the last, ever since the euro, has embraced this nationalism, this ridiculous blending of disparate groups into some, you know, beautiful rainbow coalition, to steal a phrase from homosexual. And it's been an abject failure. I mean, you look at Europe, and Europe is a catastrophe right now. They have uncontrolled illegal and legal immigration everywhere. France is probably going to be majority Muslim in the next 100 years, certainly judging by what I saw when I was there a few months ago. And Sweden is saying enough, and Italy is saying enough. And Italy also, you know, she's quite attractive, too. And she's quite articulate, let's say that. And articulate in a way that does not pull any punches, which I think is immensely pleasing.
Oh, absolutely. She basically showed the cross to all the globalists. I mean, she said things, and I don't have her speech in front of me, but it's, and of course, YouTube and all the usual media outlets of the propagandists of the globalists are censoring her left, right, and center. But there are several speeches where she's basically an unapologetic Christian, an unapologetic mother, and she speaks about motherhood. She speaks about to the insanity of transsexualism and these things, and about preserving the national identity of Italy and what that means for the survival of the Italian society. And to your points, CBD, over the course of the last however many decades, crazy socialism and nihilistic anti-family, all these things have caused, you know, a plunging birth rate. And of course, open borders from mostly Muslim nations are causing these countries to be subsumed and their national identities to cease to exist. I mean, Sweden, for example, I mean, the city of Malmo in particular, if not Stockholm, the capital, is almost unrecognizable as a Muslim capital. In fact, there has been over the years an epidemic of rapes, and that has been covered up by the press. And in fact, I believe it was people were arrested or even put on trial for even mentioning it in the press that it was an epidemic, the same thing that happened in England with the grooming gangs in Birmingham, England. So is it too late? Are the people waking up too late? I don't know. It's a positive sign that they are waking up, and it's a definite slap in the face and a kick in the crotch to people like Klaus Schwab and Fink and Soros and all the other usual suspects who are trying to, you know, basically just turn the world into one vast, who knows what, globalist hellhole. But the ironic thing is now they have to go up against either the Chinese and also the move for a global caliphate by global Islam. So it is refreshing, though, that Meloni is won, and also that, and I forgot who the name of the person who won in Sweden is. So hopefully this is, it's an awakening. Is it too late? That's the question. Who knows?
You know, it's fascinating to me that she's called a far right leader. I'm not sure that Europe understands what far right means. They haven't for a very, very long time. And apparently one of the signals that she is the leader of a far right political party is that she opposes, I'm reading from a Yahoo News article, she opposes undocumented immigration. Now, undocumented immigration is a fascinating phrase. That's called illegal immigration. That's called breaking the law to come into the country. And why that makes a politician a far-right politician is simply beyond my understanding. They're doing that in the United States. You know, we shifted from wetback to illegal immigrant to undocumented immigrant to pre-citizen. I mean, what the hell, what are they going to call it tomorrow? But this changing of the nomenclature to make the term for illegal immigrants a gentler thing is a danger. And I bang the drum about language far too often on Ace of Spades when I write there, but it is so vitally important that we take back the language. And that is probably the worst offense that I can think of. Undocumented immigration. Now, is there something called undocumented homicide? Is there something called undocumented cash withdrawal? I mean, it's called crime. Crime is crime. There's no way around that. And we need to push back on that kind of crap. And sorry about the segue.
No, that's quite. We have to push back on that. Our friend, and he's been our guest a couple of times. We should have him back. Michael Walsh has a great article, a great piece in his thepipeline.org about Die Monster Die, but instead of DE, he spells it as DEI, which is diversity, equity, and inclusion. And he basically goes off on how the language is used to basically strangle any kind of political opposition. The phrase itself, undocumented immigrant, automatically implies a legal status to the individual that you are referring to that he or she should not and must not have. But by giving them that, by ceding the language, you are in effect ceding this issue like we do every other damned issue with to the left. And, you know, you talk about being labeled a quote unquote far right, whatever it is, a politician or far right conservative, as if the adjective is also used as an insult. But the fact of the matter is, Glenn Beck many years ago, and whatever you think of Glenn Beck, it's irrelevant. But he really opened my eyes when he stated that there is no such thing. He basically blew up the entire left, center, and right paradigm, because to call someone far right, all it does is it denudes the culpability of the left and solely of the left for all the failure, all the violence, all the fanaticism that is a part of the political landscape. And it tries to equate that, well, both sides are equally bad. And somehow, of course, you never get to hear about any kind of leftist violence. It's always, you know, the far right. Nobody ever explains what the far left, quote unquote, is. But no, I agree with him.
The term far left is embargoed in the United States. I haven't seen that in years.
No, it isn't. There's no such thing. But the thing is, in real terms, and this was his nugget of geniusness that I doffed my hat to him. It's the way that what we have is you have people that believe in ordered liberty, freedom, individual rights, and a free society. And it's a sliding scale that goes more and more towards more levels of tyranny and oppression until you have total totalitarian society. And that's what it is. And in order to maintain or establish that society it's really the purview of the left. You need violence, you need repression, you need censorship, and they are the ones that are guilty of it. It is not us. So this whole notion of a quote unquote far right doesn't exist, because what does the right believe in? We believe in liberty. We believe in freedom. So to be far right, there is none. I can only believe in freedom to such an extent. But we're the ones that are demonized. So this whole notion of it is just I don't accept it. But you are right, and as is Walsh and others who say we have to take back the language, because when we cede that landscape, there's the problem. That also leads to all this whole problem of the GOP, because the GOP accepts this thing that the problems that the left always says are problems. They say, well, we agree with you, but we have better solutions to it. You have to reject that entirely. And that's once you do that, then it's, if you don't do that, then you're bound to lose.
One of my favorite, one of the most nausea producing phrases is reproductive health. That's another one that the right in the United States has ceded to the left. Reproductive health. Ripping an unborn child out of a woman's uterus is reproductive health. I find that fascinating in an absolutely shocking way. But anyway, this is clearly CBD's day to segue into all sorts of different things. So just bear with me.
No, no problem. So segue away. And if you want, we can take a little bit of a break and we'll segue into another topic and be right back with it. So hang in there, folks.
It's a deal.
And we are back for our final segment of the podcast. A couple of things that are sort of ace-style quick hits. I think there was an interesting piece yesterday where, in the wake of the horrible devastation of Hurricane Ian in South Florida, there was a very brave Coast Guardsman who was being praised and lauded by our wonderful president, who I've called Sponge Brain Shits Pants. And he was praising him up and down for his heroics and his bravery. But meanwhile, he's about to be drummed out of the Coast Guard because he refuses to get the COVID vaccine.
It's just delicious. You know, the irony is obviously lost on the Biden Calorima junta. But actually, I've got an article up. Aviation survival technician, second class, Zach Loesch. He's a hero. He's a fine, fine man, and he did his job and much more. And he'll be fired within days for rejecting the COVID vaccine. So way to go, Biden. You know, way to grab a headline for yourself and make yourself look like an incredible asshole. But you know something? There's a reason why he looks like an incredible asshole most of the week is because he is an incredible asshole. And he's a senile old fool, and he's a bastard. And the idea that he is doing this is unbelievable.
Right. But, well,
this is the insanity that is America nowadays. It doesn't surprise me. I said it was unbelievable, but that's not true. It's not unbelievable. It's perfectly believable.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, the other day, the idiot was crowing about how gasoline prices are falling and that, his wonderful, Inflation Reduction Act is working. It's working so well that now gas prices are going back up. But of course, what does he blame? He blames the hurricane, give us a break. No one is buying that crap.
Well, I guess you'd get a little blip. Some of the refineries probably shut down for several hours or maybe a day or two. But yeah, you're right. It's a triviality. And speaking about petroleum, OPEC's meeting, or actually OPEC Plus, which is OPEC plus some non-OPEC producers, they're meeting on Wednesday, I believe. And the assumption is that they're going to cut 1 million barrels a day from total production. And that's timing for the Republican Party. They won't take advantage of it, but it's perfect timing. Fuel is on the way back up. If this happens, fuel is definitely on the way back up into, high threes, low fours. And, I feel really badly for people who need to drive. And
our wonderful and competent, I don't know what he is, our transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, whatever his name is.
How do you pronounce his name? Buttigieg?
I believe it's Booty Judge or something like that. Booty Judge? if I say it, considering who and what he is, that would be bad, wouldn't it? But he's just a total, forgetting his sexual orientation or the fact that you could rag on his name because of that. The guy's a complete inept fool and knows nothing about anything. When he was the mayor of South Bend, he took a pretty decent little burg and destroyed it. He destroyed its economy and it's a crime infested shithole right now. But that makes him perfectly capable to run our transportation department, where he is advising everybody to go buy electric cars because that'll save the day. As if. And on that, we have knucklehead Newsom in California, who has banned the sale of automobiles, of all gas-powered automobiles, I think by 2030. And on top of that, he's banned the sale of gas generators, lawnmowers, anything that's powered by fossil fuels is to be banned. And on that bandwagon, on the other coast, Kathy Hochul, Andrew Cuomo with breasts, basically says, hold my beer. I'm going to ban all automobiles in New York State, the sale of gas-powered automobiles by 2035. This is mad, people. This is not going to end well. But look, if you vote for these people in New York State and in California, then I hate to say it, you deserve, as H.L. Mencken stated, to get it good and hard. What you vote for, unless you can somehow figure a way to get off of your prejudices of what you think a Republican is, or what you think a Democrat is, or what you have been told what's going on in the environment or what gasoline is, then you are going to suffer immeasurably. Within the next 10 years, your state is going to become a medieval hellhole if it isn't already. Just look at San Francisco.
Well, the problem with New York is that the Republican Party in New York State is so abysmal. They are so disorganized and they are so go along to get along attitude that they, even with quality candidates, they don't provide the support necessary to challenge the Democrat majorities. Lee Zeldin is running against Hochul. And, you know, he's not a bad candidate. He's not thrilling. And he seems to be closing the gap a little bit. But obviously he's not.
I believe he is within striking distance. That's what the
I've heard that. I don't know. They can fire up the printing presses in New York City and throw a couple hundred thousand votes Hochul's way. And there's very little chance that he's going to win. And that can be laid squarely on the at the foot of the Republican Party of New York. They're pathetic. You know that. You lived there for years.
Yeah. Historically speaking, I mean, let's face it, New York, you know, it's always been the, and ironically enough or not ironically, what was known as the Rockefeller Republicans. These are people that believe every much as the Democrats do in the New Deal. It's just that they think that they can manage big government better than Democrats. They don't believe in freedom. They don't believe in limited government. It's not in their DNA. And over the years, I think about the only conservative, if you can even call him that, Republican that we've ever had was Al D'Amato, who was our senator, who was actually pretty good. But George Pataki was kind of meh. Obviously, Nelson Rockefeller was kind of meh. And it just led to all these, you know, and now, of course, it's basically on the way to becoming a one party state. The only fly in the Democrats' ointment, thank God, was the recent decision in the courts that struck down their gerrymandering attempt to really seal the deal. So maybe with that, maybe Zeldin does have a chance. And the only thing I can say that he has going for him is that he's a sane human being, whereas Hochul is not. And she's, again, her scandal with this pay for play to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars with a COVID vaccine scandal that she's been tied to. We'll see if that, you know, if the press can effectively embargo it, which I guess it can, or it can't, if that sinks her. Scandals like that, I don't necessarily think really harm Democrats all that much. It's other things that might, other gaffes or other stupidities that if the meme takes hold in it and someone like Lee Zeldin can take advantage of it, then you have something. For me, it's crime and the whole nonsense of open borders as well as the economy. I think that's, if he can somehow hammer that home to New Yorkers, I think he has a chance. I hope he has a chance.
Yeah, I think you're being optimistic, but
maybe Dave in Florida can clue us in on that next
week. That would be nice.
That would be sweet. We'll see. You know, you never know, but it's not, we'll see what happens. That's the best I can do. Gee, you come here for this scintillating analysis, folks. We'll see.
I don't know. What do you think? I don't know either. Speaking of, I don't know, I'm sort of dropping this in your lap. The Nord Stream pipelines.
Yes.
Were either sabotaged or were severely damaging explosions caused by lack of maintenance or simple operator error or something like that. I wrote about this on Ace of Spades yesterday, I believe. And I simply don't know. I linked to an article that suggested that it was just crappy maintenance and that it probably wasn't sabotage. But if you tell me that it was sabotage, I'll say, okay. And if you tell me it was crappy maintenance, I'll say, okay. Now, of course, our genius Secretary of State comes out with a absolutely inflammatory and ridiculous comment about it being a wonderful opportunity. That's exactly the kind of stuff that Secretaries of State should not say. But as usual, he is, you know, he's following his boss's technique of saying really, really stupid things.
At the wrong time.
Yes.
Absolutely. Well, here's the thing, CBD. I tend to think, and I've, believe it or not, I've been to Russia many, many years ago. And, you know, it is contrary to, I think it was whoever, I think it was Dave or somebody chided me for claiming that Russia was a third world country with a first world military. Well, it turns out their military ain't so hot, but they do have ICBMs and they are definitely better off economically than they were, you know, 30 years ago when the wall came down, that's for sure. But there is a lot of, there still has, is, and there is a mentality of what's known as really deferred maintenance on things and money going to places where it's needed, where it's not going to, like something like the pipeline. But My gut tells me that it is either human error, operator error, and perhaps, you know, the deferred maintenance that has been deferred for way too long. But of course, the convenience, the timing of it is perfect in the middle of the war with the Ukraine. That said, you are absolutely right. To inflame someone like Vladimir Putin, who is now on the ropes politically, and his life may very well be on the line with this failed invasion of Ukraine, now calling up troops, which the people are incensed with over in his country. You know, it just, you don't want to poke the bear and have the guy like toss a nuke on Kiev. Then what are we going to do? Meanwhile, all of a sudden, Zelensky is and everybody is pushing for Ukraine to join NATO while they're at war with Russia. So if he becomes a member of Ukraine while he's at war with Russia, does that not automatically invoke the NATO charter where we have to retaliate against the Russians? This is the brain trust. This is the best and the brightest that we have running our foreign policy and running our domestic policy. This is not a good thing. And so whether it was sabotage, it certainly wasn't the Russians that would sabotage the pipe, because if they wanted to cut off the flow of oil, they just got to hit the switch and say embargo on, and nothing would happen. Why would the Russians blow up their own pipeline? This makes absolutely zero sense. But the freaky thing is that, you know, and this knucklehead Victoria Nuland, a number of months ago, when the war started, she said she was actually cheering for these kind of things to happen, that the Nord Stream would be blown up. And I'm going, oh my God, if America was involved in this in some way, if our military or the SEALs or whoever actually blew up the pipeline, that is an act of war against Russia. Are we out of our minds? And the answer to that, if that is the case, is absolutely yes.
All I can cheer for is casualties. You know, I have no love lost. For Ukraine, yeah. It's an impossibly corrupt country that is certainly not a friend of the United States. I have no love lost for Russia. It's an impossibly corrupt country that is certainly no friend of ours. And I would laugh and laugh and laugh if the lights all over Europe went out this winter and they froze. I'm sorry. I know that's cruel, and I think it's a nasty and not very
but
kind.
You know, so,
thing, thing. But you know something. I'm sorry. I simply don't care. As I say, I'm rooting for casualties on both sides.
Look, as we spoke of with the situation in Italy and in Sweden and in France and in England and all over Western Europe, you know, if it takes massive amounts of immigrants to turn your country into a 16th or what should I say, 16th century, that's paradise, a 6th century dark age, you know, Islamic hellhole. If that's what it takes to wake you up out of your slumber to say, you know, maybe Western civilization, maybe we shouldn't hate ourselves all that much. Maybe Western civilization isn't all that bad. If that's what it takes to wake you up, a little bit of pain, the same with freezing your ass off by embracing in the Green New Deal and, you know, windmills and solar panels that don't work as opposed to fossil fuels. If you got to suffer, sometimes that's what it takes to wake people up. Will the Europeans wake up? Well, there are certainly signs, at least in the elections in Italy and Sweden, that they are waking up, and certainly in that regard. So hopefully, you know, maybe this is it. But you're right. I mean, Europe, it's a love-hate relationship with them for many reasons, both as a Jew and as an American. But, you know, if this is what it takes. Now the other infuriating thing that I don't want to let go of, perhaps as we conclude the podcast, is that, you know, we with this budget now that we just approved yet another continuing resolution, yeah, in America, $65 billion more aid going to Ukraine. When from what I understand, there's like $63 billion worth of damage in Florida. Now, you tell me if there's something that the GOP, I mean, this is like, or anybody, like you want to run on something, here's something. How could you spend $65 billion to Ukraine when we just have one of our states got wiped out in a hurricane? If you can't run on that issue.
Absolutely. You know, maybe one of these years somebody will come up with a good slogan, something like, I don't know, make America great again, so that we spend our money where we need it rather than where other people decide it's needed. Yeah, that's a no-brainer. And yet the Republican Party is so pathetic and so corporate that they will not take advantage of that. And it's sad when the greatest impediment to a successful country is the Republican Party. I expect the Democrat Party to push for socialism. That's what they do. That's what they are. And we know our enemy there. But when the Republicans are so feckless that they can't take advantage of just the most wonderful and easy home runs that they can hit, you know.
Well, it's intentional.
You need a new party.
It's right. It's not. There's the whole thing. You can't say it's the stupid party at this point to do all these things. It's intentional. I mean, there's no like we said with. I forgot what it was. We were just talking about with the Rockefeller Republicans in New York. It's not that they oppose socialism necessarily. It's just that they think that they can do big government better. They're on board with transforming America. They just kind of want to do it at their speed and sort of with them at the helm, thinking that they can do it better. But that the belief that the individual, as opposed to the state being the arbiter of you know where the power should rest. They're against that just every much as the Democrats are, but just a slightly different shade of it or a different tinge. So there's the problem right there is the Republican Party either has to be completely taken over or it has to be destroyed. And that is our impediment. Unfortunately, they're the ones that are holding us back.
Well, when we have Dave in Florida on next week, we need to ask him about the shift away from corporate Republicanism and toward the more principled MAGA conservative.
Absolutely.
He has spoken about it in the past, and it is happening. Right. Whether it's going to happen quickly enough, who knows?
Yeah, I definitely want to hit on that issue and on what we were talking about before with the Latin American voting bloc and also just New York State and what's to be done. And lots of great subjects coming up with the election only really a month away, folks. So. Yeah. So stick around next week as we tease that one with Dave in Florida. But for now, I think we've come to the end of another great podcast. For CBD, it's JJ Sefton. We will see you next week, and thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, folks.